Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Today's episode is part two of Women in AV with Annette Harlow, Mara Schullo, and Christina Daniel. We're going to pick up right where we left off talking about the number of women in video in Washington, D.C. You really have, because all of our young and up and comings, 50-50 at least. Jake is saying he thinks it's 50-50 at least. Yeah. All of our up and comings from years back when you left us alone in D.C., right? A lot of those women shifted into video and they're doing a fabulous job. But I'll let Annette speak for that. She's been there longer.
Yeah, I think the only department that I don't see, because there's video women now, like you said, coming up, and they're supporting each other and they're helping train each other and look out for each other. And I actually see, and I think it's regional too, like Mara said, and because I see more female riggers and lighting people than I see audio. I don't see any women in audio anywhere that I work, but I think they kind of, I think, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you have your world and I have my world and sometimes they overlap and maybe there's a lot of audio women in your world, but not in the areas that I'm in. Rigging I see, lighting I see, you know, graphics, of course, and prompter, but not audio. So, I mean, but I'm talking to two right now, two audio, but I don't work with you guys. Yeah.
That's true. I don't see a lot of men in the graphics position. I don't often see men in graphics positions.
Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I do know.
Yeah.
I do.
I know quite a few, actually.
Yeah.
I've got all the faces in my head, but I don't want to continue to name names. I know that Dan wouldn't mind.
I mean, when I'm talking independent contractors, now I have to use union, so I do use a lot of male graphics folks. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't, you know, when you're doing independent contracting and you're on a big show, it's always, I always see a woman march in with her bags and laptops and everything. I'm always expecting that. That's funny. 'Cause it depends. So,
Very
I'm
true.
So glad that it's 50-50. That makes me so incredibly happy.
Well, we're reaching back in the way back machine for Ray and Mara. The women in audio that I remember way back in the DC area was those ladies that work for Robin. Who, do you remember Robin's name? The Robin's company. Do you remember? And that's the last time I saw like a kind of a group of women that did audio. Do we remember, Mara?
I do remember Robin. Okay. I also remember, but now we have Silo, which is Julia. Julia is the co-founder for Silo Productions and Dusty DeZombo is on her. And I know her very well as a sound engineer, and there's a lot that there's pretty much nothing her and Dusty can't do. I mean, they really are quite fantastic at it.
There are two young ladies on Facebook, that are part of the soundgirls.org. They did an episode on mansplaining with the creators of AV Educate. Does everybody know who AV Educate is from Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't, they have webinars that are for technicians and engineers, and it's some really good and sometimes really in-depth teaching. So they're fantastic. Well, they also have a podcast. So Omar, Colum, I'm going to forget his last name, but they have a podcast called The Mo Show, and they had Becky Campbell and Susan, I think it's Williams, that were on that podcast about mansplaining. And if you haven't seen that or heard that actually podcast, if you haven't heard it, go out there and listen to it. It was the best. It was really good. But yes, those two ladies are also a part of the soundgirls.org. Christina, I can think of some other subjects that I would like to talk to you about sometime, including how you got to where you are so that you can influence others to, you know, that being in charge that they want to reach is attainable.
Right.
You know?
A lot of energy drinks. That's all it is. A lot of energy drinks.
A lot of caffeine.
Yeah. you need a sponsorship at that point.
That's true.
I was talking to somebody about the Starbucks boycott over Black Lives Matter. And I'm like, yep, I'm with you. You're asking me to be with you. I'm with you. And it's easy enough right now. We're not on show site. I don't know that I can go without a Starbucks when I have to stay up for hours on end.
Yeah, I know. Right.
I don't promise it at that point.
Yeah. It's when you go to, well, you know, I was just at Sam's Club for the record. And I like when you work in this business, it's no joke that when you pass like a giant thing of the 5 hour energy and you're like $34, that's a bargain. And then you're counting them to see how many will get you through each show. So you're just packing them that way. Cause you're like, okay, I'm going to need 7. If I go on the road for the, I'll just throw one extra in, you know, and I know that feeling. I know that feeling. But I think we drink more energy drinks than at any bar ever. I mean, I remember getting in trouble with my company one time because I had an event that was off cuff. Sorry. Had an event that went till 4 a.m. with these doctors that were talking about slides. And I was slide jockeying through and making corrections and working in New York. And these doctors had gotten drunk, and we were starting at 6 a.m. We got out at 4. I went back all the way to my hotel at the Pennsylvania to have to come back to the Grand Hyatt, which was across the city. And they're like, what did you take out of the mini bar? $21. And I'm like, listen, I took every single Red Bull out of that mini fridge. I don't care what else was in there. There was a bedwetter, and now they do make like the bedwetter size of Red Bull. That's like giant. I think I chugged them all on the way back over across town because I needed to shower. So I just remember thinking, I drink a lot of energy drinks and I'm wondering how this is, what's going to happen to me later in life. But if you go on site, you know, there's always going to be Rebecca Drasden, you know, that like you get, there's chocolate, there's licorice, yep. There's energy drinks, there's 5 hour, like there's no end to understanding our addiction on site.
You like, don't have an addiction now. You will when you get in this industry. That's all it is.
It's true.
I learned that one from her, and I would bring things in, particularly after Halloween when I had leftover candy with the kids, right? Yeah. So I learned that from her, that just even that little bowl of chocolate or whatever on my table might be something
absolutely
that people appreciated. When I first started in this business, and people would feed the crew, right? It was always this big thing, big deal. Oh my goodness, so nice of them. They fed the crew.
Yeah.
And that's why I named the podcast Feed the Crew. It is something that has stuck with me as when you feed the crew, you have a happy crew.
Mm. That's right. Like, and Ray, you've been on shows with me where I bring in a giant tub of all kinds of stuff, just like Rebecca. Yeah. At least Rebecca was smart enough to get a road case because it's on wheels. Mm-hmm. I was on a budget. It was like giant Tupperware thing. Love it. But I remember $200 at Sam's Club just for the copacetic of people coming in and being like, oh man, I could use a soda or I could use a energy drink or like a thing of nuts or whatever. It's just makes a world of difference about how they feel about working for you and that you're thinking about the little things about them and that you know that they'll go the extra mile for you for just mm-hmm. because you're considering them. So sure, you're right.
This is a
good name. Good name, Ray. When do we get our t-shirts?
A little off topic. Yeah. I know. I want to do t-shirts so bad. A little off topic, but do you think, Mara, that the situation, was that a sexist move or was that just pure greed money on his part?
I think likes to be in charge. Should I tell the story or real quick or does
yeah, because I don't know.
Okay. So I was put in charge of a large show and Ray was supposed to be on my show, and we were doing one of the things that was going to be most important for the show was the recordings. So 2 days ahead of time of loading into the show, and I explained this to either VER or whoever I got them for, I needed matching Marantz recorders. And what I wanted to do was have my A1, which I had chosen Ray to be my A1. And I had this all set up days and days and days, weeks ahead of time, right, of what was going to happen and how this was going to be crewed, because I didn't see him making a move on this. And he was going to be, I was sales, but also I know operations very well. And so I was putting a book together of everybody's responsibilities and where everybody was and all that was going on, including, you know, what hotel they were staying at and all of that. If you needed to find somebody and you had this book, you would know exactly what was going on, right? It was the, if I die in a fiery plane crash book, like go to this book and you'll know what Mara knows, like the freedom of information. The book idea. Yeah. Maybe the book idea did come from you. I was like, but I used to jokingly call it the Freedom of Information Act. Like whatever I know, you know. There was no holding cards to myself at this point. Like I'm not that important. You know, I can be replaced. So I made this book for, and I also, when we talk about this, are we talking about the fact that he wouldn't pay you $50 more?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I asked for Ray because I knew Ray, and because wanted to be BMOC, big man on campus, in my opinion, he decided to crew his own. You know, he's like, well, I'm not going to do what Mara says. And so he literally picked a fight with Ray over $50. And she's like, my rate's my rate. We already discussed this. And she was right. And she was fair. And the rest of the crew was expecting her. So this is also a morale issue at this point, in my opinion.
Two days before the show.
Instead, he booked somebody else from Atlanta 2 days before the show to replace Ray, who was less, $50 less than Ray, but I had to pay for a plane ticket to DC and I had to put her up in a hotel. So how? And she could only stay for 2 days. Ray was booked for the whole week. Like how was this different? And we went to blows on it. He threw that diary in the garbage. And I took it out of the garbage and brought it with me. And he started asking me questions. And as he's asking me questions, I'm reaching in my bag and I'm handed him the diary. And I'm like, every question you have is in that book. I'm happy to answer verbally since you need them answered now. But had you looked at it and known that I had, this was already the stream of, it's, there's tabs. Look under the tab that you need. This is General Session. This is West Wing. This is East Wing. This is, you know, these are who are supposed to be in charge. It's just, he just did not want to share the limelight of the show with me in any way. And there was no limelight. That's the problem that I had with this particular person. It's not every guy, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of this was a little bit of misogynistic about, you know, and I think also that he was also getting, you know, he was using accruing company that was a friend of his that he was getting a kickback from too. So everybody he pushed off that I promised a relationship in my shows, you know, he's, well, I'm taking over. And it was just shocking to me. Oh, and the records, I brought them in 2 days earlier to have every single one of them QC'd prior to the event start. 32 of them, we only needed 27, but I wanted all 32. I wanted all the RC wires put with them. I wanted all of the exact same mixers for every single room. So you walked in every room. Any tech could walk in a room and figure it out, okay? Every room was going to have the same thing. PC audio, podium audio, a wired lavalier. Jesus Christ. God help us, right? Right? And one wireless handheld mic because they're going to do round tables. So they knew that we were being recorded. He ignored me altogether, did not have an A1 come in and QC all of them. They all went out. Who knows what was, I mean, when I got the records back, even though I bought a terabyte thing, didn't even hear that. He put everything on two different laptops with two different operating systems and not on their C drive. He just put them on his A1s put them on the laptop desktop. 33 gigs each on the desktop. I'm surprised these computers, laptops even turned on. So I had to extract all of them, put them on the terabyte drive. I'm a salesperson, by the way, put them on the terabyte drive, right? As we're looking at them, some of them are WAV files. Some of them stop and start every 5 minutes. It was a disaster because of what he did and all of the preparation that I had put ahead of time that he literally wiped the slate clean because he didn't want to listen to the groundwork that was already placed for him because he was on other shows. And we fought, and I'm like, look, there is a tension that this show needs, okay? If you're on another show, yes, I expect that you're going to be, your attention is on that other show, and I respect that. But allow me to lay the groundwork for you so when you hit the ground running. he didn't appreciate any of that. And in the his frivolity and fragile identity crisis in some capacity, he just needed it to only have his mark alone on it. And I couldn't understand. I was so frustrated because I was trying to be a team player, and well, you get the picture. It was just ridiculous. I mean, and he fought over Ray, and I'm like, so you bring in a person, you pay for their plane ticket home and back, and they're staying at the Washington Hilton? They're staying at the Hinckley. Like, are you serious right now? That was $250 a night. Just the one night would have been the $50 extra that Ray was asking for the rest of the week, you know, would have paid for it.
From my side, I had worked a gig for them. Well, and it's AV called me, was the project manager when I got there.
Yeah.
And I did the show and turned in my invoice. And he called me up after I turned in my invoice and said, you're overpaid. Said, I'm not overpaid. That's the lowest rate I give anybody. And it's because, you know, it's here in town. The gigs are always here in town. I appreciate it. It's $200 a day less than I get from anybody else. And I didn't charge you for my computer when you last minute told me that I was going to be in charge of 90 some wireless microphones and had to do all the frequencies. Didn't charge you for my computer. So I'm not overpaid. He's like, well, I don't pay techs that much. Okay. If you can't pay me what I'm asking for, don't call me. I'm cool with that. If it's too much for you and too much for your shows and all that, I understand that. Just don't call me.
Yeah.
And it was that plain and simple. But he did call me. He did book me for the show. And 2 days before the show wants to ask me to reduce my rate. I said, absolutely not. You can find somebody else.
And I don't know where he got that, because I was the salesperson on that show. And I had specific people that I already knew their day rates. And I knew how much overtime was going into it. And when I did the cost analysis before even sending the RFP back to the client for them to sign and agree to those costs, it was already included with overtime ideas. Like, I overestimated. I'd rather overestimate to a client, which I've always told them, I'd rather overestimate later when I send you the bill than underestimate, because then you could be coming in far shorter than you thought.
Right.
So, but that depends on how organized you are as a client. You know, if you're going to have our team have to redo things for you and people are into overtime, then that's on you. But if not, then you're going to be way under where I thought you would be. This is the Cadillac. So it's all the features, even the seats are heated, but here we are, you know, if you're smart and you're organized ahead of time, we're good. I just couldn't, some people you can't get that to, but that show, you know, I lost personally $8,000 on that show because the recordings were so bad, even though I had done everything possible to try to make those recordings go well. And he ignored every step I made. I had to pay LeGrand Frazier $8,000 to fix all 27 breakout rooms over 3 days audio because it was all over the map. So I lost my what is it? I don't do sales
Your
anymore.
Commission.
I lost my commission. He didn't.
So, And the other part of that for me was that when he did that and called me and I'm like, I'm out, done. Just don't even, this is not a conversation that I'm having. If you're not going to pay my rate, then I told you don't call me. And I meant that 100%, just don't call me. Yeah. So I hung the phone up and I called the general manager and I'm like, just so you know, that was absolute bullshit and leaving a bad taste in my mouth as far as this new guy that you've got going on here. And Russ is like, hang on a second. And he puts me on hold and he comes back just a moment later. He says, yeah, no, we have you on a different show. We're taking you and we're putting you on Nick's show. So I'm still working the same dates, basically for AV for the rate that I asked for, doing the same job, which was to be in charge of the records. I go in and did, I think we might have had like 20, which included backup Mara. We only had like 10 rooms total.
I mean, I had a whole spreadsheet that you could have.
You had tons of rooms and tons of different sessions. So mine was straight up, you know, 10 rooms, 10 decks, and keep them going for 3 days. Mm-hmm. My records were perfect.
Yeah. mine were all over the map. If you can imagine, 3 days, 3 days, 27 rooms, 3 different sessions per day. The amount was astronomical. The fact that he wouldn't even bring in somebody to pay them $200, just a half day, to sit down with 27 or 32 Marantzes and just QC them to make sure they were all the same. That was it. And put the wires with them. Everything was ready to go. I actually put the 8-foot tables out and just popped them down. And he's like, well, what's all this? This isn't necessary. It is necessary. Because once you get on site, now you're wasting time making sure that they're QC'd. I mean, your A1s are going to go around and still check and do report check. But if some of these aren't working, right now, the ER can come and replace them because we're 2 days ahead of time and we're not paying for it because I told them because they all need to be QC'd and they'd have to travel to their destination. And VR completely understood that. And I got the exact same Marantzes. I mean, like, and then the terabyte drive, and he had 2 A1s that he hired to do different sides of the hotel. And what I got back
myself
was such a, I mean, I, honest to God, sometimes I think I could use that $8,000 like right now, all I can tell you is, what is it? You can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. I don't know why he did it. It looks bad because it's Ray and I, and we're two females, but it doesn't look good that he wouldn't take anybody's advice whatsoever who was trying to help him out. And he got away with all of that, and, you know, whatever. Oh, is this live? This is not live.
No worries. No worries.
I can't even tell you some of the crap I dealt
with. Making me work.
Yeah. AVI is a trip.
Oh my Lord. Yeah. Greg Bryce, that one of my favorites with Greg Bryce, real quick, was last minute. He asked for my help at the DC Convention Center, and he's calling me when I have like 3 days in town, 4 days in town. He's like, I just need you for 3 of them. I'm like, dude. He's like, well, I'll have them load in and blah, blah, blah. And you don't have to do load out. So I just need you for 2 of them. Okay, fine. 2 days. Fine. If you need me that desperately, I will come for 2 days. So I went in for 2 days. And after the second day, he's like, I'd really love to have you come back in tomorrow morning. It's strictly load out. For load out. And I'm like, I get it in some ways because, you know, you want the organizer or the person who put things out there to clean them up. But I didn't do the setup, so there's no reason, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I could really use your help. I mean, I just need, I'm like, okay, one, you've got time to call a crewing company if you really need bodies. But two, I would do that for you tomorrow, and I would do it for you at a special rate. He's like, really, you would? I'm like, yes. $1,000 day rate.
Boom.
That's my special rate to have me tomorrow. What do you think? He's like, I'll call for help. Yeah, you will.
Oh, I know. And it's amazing what happens when you, I will say this to anybody who's in our business from the beginning, always not a bad thing to start from the bottom. Not a bad thing to understand from box pushing all the way up. You understand the time limitations and everything that it entails to get a job done. From the moment that you step on to the dock until they say cut and it all comes down, it is really important to be ahead of the game as much as you can, and ask questions. And if anybody ever feels bad, makes you feel bad about asking questions, go to somebody else and ask them. That's true. Really want to know your business, there's always going to be somebody that wants to know. And if they have an ego that they don't want to show you how to do something, that just means they're not stable in their position, okay? If they don't mind showing you what they're doing and teaching you something, that person is kind of an irreplaceable person. They know they have the next job because they care about what they're doing and they're showing you the right way to do it. So if you have an ego about it,
it's also a thing of, if they're not wanting to show you, it's because they see something in you that you have potential to take their job. That's the other thing. Also, there's something about you that intimidates them. That's whether that's a male or female, that's just how it is. I mean,
I agree.
Doesn't matter.
I feel that person is also not very confident in what they know.
Yes. Right.
Right. So if you're not confident that you have the right information, you can't be confident to pass on information.
Yeah. It's true. And those who try to undermine you while you're doing the right thing too, are lack the confidence and probably the skills to do the job properly. They're the ones who are last in and always the first ones out the door, you know? So, and then they're wondering why they're not getting paid as much, is because, you know, they're not waiting that extra few minutes until the actual end of the shift where they're like, crap, we need two people to stay for an extra 2 hours. And because you're willing to do it, and because you're willing to put in the time, you win, because you're going to get paid two extra hours and you're probably going to miss traffic in DC.
Right.
But
I just want to say that I think that part was, we're outside of the podcast, but Mara is the queen of soundbite wisdom. So if you listen to what she just said, there was some really good wisdom in there about starting from the bottom, and you could just cut that part out and use that as promotional stuff, even though it doesn't become part of your podcast, because all that wisdom she just gave was exactly, it wasn't within our podcast questions, but certainly, and Christine too, what she was just, you wrote it down too. Okay. Listen to her. It's like,
I wrote it down. I'm like, okay. story cut about AVI. After that, some good stuff.
from both of them. Me, I'm just sitting here.
Both of them.
But Annette, you can appreciate what I also said about Phil, right? About the perfectionist.
Oh my god.
Right?
Yes. And
I mean, he probably, because of that, made us better techs, because we're like, whoa, this is it's just even a crinkle. It was just incredible.
He's the same. Rick just did a big show for him in his office. They had a big medical show out of the office. He just did it a couple of weeks ago. Phil's the same. He hasn't changed.
Yeah. For sure. It's true. He raised the bar, and anything below it, you're like, whoa, man, you're not. And for that, I'm so thankful, because that's where I get the better gigs and I get to work with the better people.
Exactly.
Or are always willing to teach you something new. Oh, you don't know this? Oh, this is vMix. Let me show you how this works now. You should download this app. Always full of information and how to do it for free to get your skills up, because there's always something new. That's the one thing about our industry, is like, there's always going to be something new.
We got into the pandemic. Speaking of these people. So Christina, I know you don't know who we're talking about, but post Annette working for Advanced Concepts, and I actually got pulled in when Mara left, right? Mara was no longer available to Advanced Concepts, and I got recommended. I got pulled in and became another little right hand for Rebecca. They are wonderful, wonderful people, including when we hit the pandemic, for Rebecca to reach out and say, hey, how are you doing? So we had a conversation. And at that point, she and I were talking once a week about what Advanced Concepts is doing. And I'm talking the tech, everything. She had no problems with sharing all of that information to make me a better person, regardless of the fact that I can't help her from Houston, and I'm working full-time for staging. But she's just wanting to share that information so much that she and I just kept talking about it. And it could have been little things, like we were talking about graphics, and they actually had me in, and because Joe called me too, they actually had me go in and be behind the scenes with Joe and the guys. I was on comm with them. I was on a Zoom call with them while they're on comm for their show. I was like, that's fabulous. Because I was so curious, and I was asking Staging Solutions if they could record the comm, because I thought it was going to be so cool. And I told Rebecca, I'm like, I asked them to record the comm, and I hope they do, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I'll invite you to the Zoom call. Almost like she wanted to one-up them. It was kind of funny. But anyway, I love her. Y'all know her.
Yeah, I have to say, Annette, Ray, and I, and Christine, you would love her. She would love you, for no doubt.
Yeah.
She's been a mentor in our industry. Thank God for her, because I think she's created, she just, without knowing it, has created a lot of independent ways of us going forward. And I think Ray and Annette and I've, and it seems like you do too. You fit that, just that mold of like, okay, this is how you do it. You just get on your trail and your track and you just keep going. And yep. She would be great on one of these calls. Christina would love
I've
to
actually
meet her.
Asked her, but she hasn't responded, but so we'll see.
You rude. Tell her. Rude.
I know, right?
Rude.
Hey, wait till she, we could actually put this out there that we were talking about her on the podcast.
Yeah.
There you go.
Rebecca.
Well, one thing I'd like to hear, Ray, and I know you brought this up in the original, when you sent out the email originally, was talking about education and what I'm curious about, and this doesn't have to be part of this podcast, but I'm curious how some of the women now, the younger women, are getting their start and if they come with any particular training. I mean, I got a video production degree. They called it radio, television, and film from the University of Maryland, but it didn't give me a whole lot. And I fell into AV, which was a whole weird different world because I thought I wanted to be an editor when I got out of college. And of course, I'm not anywhere. I don't do any of that stuff. So, and how do we train now? And we don't necessarily have to do it with this, but maybe going on when you ask other women, I'd love to know how, especially the younger women, what they're doing to get in. Do they just fall into this field or do they get like a degree from, you know, Full Sail or whatever? And, you know, how do they get into it? I'm just curious. So.
Christina's shaking her head. Do you want to answer that? For what you know, Christina?
Right now. So I actually started off when I was in high school, I wanted to be a lawyer. Mom said, you can only do family law because she didn't want me to do criminal defense. And I said, that's like the funnest part, right? She's like, no, it's too dangerous. All right, fine. I was always interested in criminal law or the music industry. And it just so happens, graduated high school, started going to community college to get the basics out the way. And I was going to transfer out to UNT, University of North Texas in Denton, Texas, out like right outside of Dallas in Arlington, I think is where it is. And went to community college, second week into my first semester of my music theory class. Teacher says, who wants to be in the music industry? Raised my hand, got an internship at a music publishing company at the time here locally. Maybe second semester, ended up working over at Sugar Hill Recording Studios, which is one of the oldest operating recording studios on the southwest side of the United States. And ended up at the University of Houston, the main campus. And the owner of the studio said, you don't need a music degree to be in this industry. It's better to get a marketing or a business degree. And then if for whatever reason, the industry doesn't do anything for you, you can go anywhere. All right, cool. Graduated with both degrees actually. Had to get a big girl job. I was getting paid minimum wage. Didn't want to live with my parents anymore. So ended up at the Hilton Americas Houston, which was the largest hotel in Houston at the time. Did everything from front desk and that kind of stuff, kind of moved my way around the hotel and kind of learned all of the operating stuff. Got tired of doing that. Ended up at PSAV doing sales. No idea what the hell I was doing. Couldn't tell the difference between HDMI and a VGA cable. Just knew that when I sold it, my guys made it work. And it wasn't until one day I had a client that was balls to the wall crazy. You know, we all have one of those. And I had to step in. I was like, you can't talk to my crew like that. I'm sorry. I ended up calling show. That was the first show I ever called in my life. And it was on the fly. It was a big gig. It was a well-known client. I'm not even going to say names. That was a big gig. Texted my director. He was out of town. And I told him, you're not allowed to leave town anymore because every time you leave town, something like this happens. He was like, okay, well, you'll be all right. You'll be fine. All right, cool. And Ray, you can probably ask Dave Max about this because he was on that show. So he did all that stuff. And from that point is when I learned why my crew would ask for things the way they ask for things, why they wanted certain pieces of equipment, and why I needed to explain to my client why you need to have a budget for this specific piece. And because I was in there and I was able to see that alone in calling the show and how all the pieces worked, even though I didn't know how to set it up, but I saw it all in operation, it made me a better salesperson. I was able to sell from front of the room to back, from drape line all the way back to front of house. And I was able to tell a story to the client. When I got to Staging Solutions, like I said, no technical idea, knowledge whatsoever, still couldn't tell the difference between a VGA and an HDMI cable. And here I am 3 years later, and I'm running a crew and yelling at riggers and asking my instructors, why isn't this scaled correctly? Like, what's going on?
And doing a fabulous job.
Questions. So to Annette's to answer Annette's question, no, I don't have a degree in audiovisual at all. You know, I just kind of fell into it, and I wanted to get back into entertainment, and this is honestly pretty close to it. You know, with the lighting and stuff, and I mean, there's what CEO doesn't want to walk in and be a rock star, right? So there's that. There was one CEO I remember asking if he could zip line from the back of the room to the front of the room, and I told him no, because our rig points don't go that way, number one, and two, that's a really big liability that you don't want to pay for. So he was like, what if I skydive in? I was like, well, we have the golf course out back, so you can try that, but I don't recommend it, because we do need you to present at some point. So, but yeah, no. So I don't have a degree in this at all. I kind of just fell into it and met a lot of great people along the way, including you ladies and Ray, of course, you know, but at the same time, I was able during my path to get to here, and I'm sure Ray, this could be on a different episode of stuff. You know, I developed relationships with those that were in the industry a lot longer and, you know, had them as a unofficial mentor. They didn't realize they were mentoring me and that kind of stuff. And you just develop a respect for those people like you guys do with Rebecca. So, no, I don't have a degree, and I just kind of found the right people that would answer my questions and didn't mind me bugging them every 5 minutes about stuff. And here I am.
So I like that. I love that story. I do have a degree, Annette, and that's one of the reasons why I want to pursue that with some other people as to the, do you have a degree? Don't you have a degree? What did it do for you if you do, or where did you get your information if you didn't? I want to inspire anyone who might be thinking about the industry, if they're listening to the podcast, to think about the different avenues that they can go. And Christine, I think that was wonderful, because a marketing and business degree for this industry, it's a fantastic idea. My degree was technical and business, but they didn't really emphasize business. They emphasized the technology, which was great, but it wasn't respected outside of the studio environment. And I wanted to do live. So I went and got an internship, and what happened was it was kind of a misogyny on the first person. And of course, we're talking about Philadelphia again. But the first person that I worked with was a bit of a sexist, misogynist kind of person. And then afterwards, getting away from that internship and getting out to some real jobs, I found that not everybody was like that. Not everybody was going to feel that way. One of the companies that I went to actually had a female partner in the company. So they were not looking at you know, in particular to say women aren't welcome. They just may not have had them, you know? So it wasn't that kind of thing for them. But the other guy that I continued to call, because he was the closest one to my house, instead of me driving an hour and a half to go to somebody's shop, I ultimately said to him, look, let me come in for you, load in, load out, pay me $50. And other than that, we can have conversations. I can talk to your other technicians kind of stuff to see, you know, where you might be able to use me in your company. And he agreed. And it gave me an opportunity to step in and talk to them. But what I didn't know was that his A1 wanted to quit. He was really good, but he was looking to give it up because he lived 2 hours away from this venue that they were doing every week. And what they didn't tell me that that's what this was more of an interview to see if I was able to be the A1 for this event every week. Turns out they were like, yeah, no, we're going to give you this job. You're going to be the A1 here every week. And from that first day, I was just so excited that they were giving me a chance, and I'm learning things and I'm paying attention to all the audio stuff. And hey, next week I'm going to mix as the A1. And at this point I've got good enough experience that there's no reason why I can't do this. I'm confident in everything. And I go back the next week and I'm standing there after we had set everything up and we're getting ready to start. And I look over and I realized something that I didn't realize the week before. I am now mixing live jazz 90 for Philadelphia. I didn't realize that it was live on the radio station, I'm mixing live Jazz 90 for Philadelphia. And then the boss comes over to me and he goes, by the way, everybody here thinks you're 26. I was like 22. Everybody thinks you're 26 and that you've got at least 5 years experience doing this. Okay. So that's the story.
Okay.
You got it? Got it, dude. We're good.
But to Christina's benefit, even though she's done a lot of tasks inside the community. So she knows, you know, she knows who to ask, who to trust, and why be the master of one when you can be the jack of all trades and sort of understand how it flows together, which is maybe the better thought. Because if you come at this in some cases, I mean, even though Ray, you are an A1, for some people coming at this from only their perspective of being audio, video, or lighting, they're only going to consider those things. Whereas if you kind of come at this at it all needs to come together, you have a good perspective of, you know, except for you, I mean, Ray, I know you're an A1, but you do know how to put it all together. But it's that's interesting because, I mean, it's good. It's, you've had some excellent, I mean, you got right in there, which is great. So Annette, what's your education? Where did you start?
I got a video production degree at the University of Maryland. They called it radio, television, and film. And
that's
then they eliminated that. Like 2 years after I got out, that department just disappeared. And so it kind of made you feel, you know, that your degree wasn't
really.
But
you wanted to be an editor. Yeah. Is that it?
I thought I did at the time. And back then, you know, that we didn't know what she wanted to do. And I actually, Kelly Falk, who was working at Future View, her brother, Kenny Hall, ran the University of Maryland's. We looked a little cable channel. So we shot like baseball and science lectures. And we had a TV show with Chris Weller, who was the women's basketball coach. We shot women's basketball and that kind of thing. And so Kelly told Kenny that they were looking for people at Future View. And I just kind of fell into AV. I didn't know what AV was, but I thought at the time, you know, when you're taking your video production classes, I thought, well, editing is cool. I like that. And I can't. I mean, even to this day, I can work my way around Adobe Premiere, but I can't. I'm glad I didn't do that. I have friends that are editors and they sit in there in the cubicle and they're just crazy. But I guess there's so much on the job training, which I think like she's had, that's my assumption is that most of the women these days probably get a lot of on the job training. Most things I've learned since the beginning is on the job training. I mean, I did go to Hughes School. I did the Hughes School thing. I was the only woman, the first woman, not the only, but the first woman to go through the Hughes School. Remember the Hughes projectors, those three gun monsters. And they pulled me aside and they said, wow, you're the first woman that's done that. And that was, you know, back then that was kind of a big deal for that one projector. But nowadays, I mean, it's lynda.com and it's AV Educate and that kind of training. And I'm assuming that the younger generation's doing more of that and maybe, maybe coming from a different educational background completely, you know, maybe just a different degree, like she said, yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for is that they can point us in the direction of some of those places because AV Educate is a really good one. It would be great to get more support to them. There's plenty more out there. I mean, I just don't know, you know, off the top of my head what some of the names are, but I, you know, I'll find them on Facebook or I find them online. And even something as simple as Infocom has free, you know, tutorials. So they have VOD on websites, but that's kind of my thing is like, where are you getting your education? Are you going to each manufacturer and grabbing their videos and watching them? Are you on AV Educate, Facebook, you know, whatever other platforms that where there's education out there for us? So just kind of trying to see where it's coming from and hopefully plug people into the right directions if they're looking.
Good.
I got into this on accident. I just tripped into it, just like Annette did. I did. It was a complete another accident. I actually went to school for television production. I went to school for communications media was what it was called. And I had these big high hopes of being the next Connie Chung. What the heck? And then I really just wanted the car. But ultimately, I went back to school after I was working for a company that was bought out by Walgreens or CVS or one of the two. And I was working in marketing at the time. So I had also done all this production for just advertising in the newspaper. So I was getting, so I went back to school for graphic design. So I actually have a minor in theater too for theater, lighting and staging, but that was just for fun because they had the better parties really. And then, But I went back to school for graphic design for real, and that got me into Christopher sold me as a bill of goods to Advanced Concepts so that I could start taking care of the Mac people of the 3,000 plus presentations that we were about to see for, oh my gosh, what was it? A TCT. TCT was huge. And that, you know, that one. And so does Ray.
We just did it again this year. Yeah.
And I was in the speaker ready room, and which is where I learned a bunch of other tricks that I, you know, and I was just shocked at the cost, you know, because they told me what I was worth and I didn't even know. And I was like, how much a day? I mean, it's just shocking to come from Pittsburgh to DC and realize that I could, in 10 days, I could pay my rent for the next 3 months, just in, plus still pay everything. I was just so shocked that I was like, whoa, this is the industry I want to be in, you know, push a box, set it up, done, you know. It was a complete accident. I had been hoping that I would be signed on to some sort of corporate company and be working at a nice little desk somewhere doing graphic design. And yeah, instead I'm all over the planet, you know, hoping that I can even sleep 4 to 5 hours and change my underwear before, you know, we arrive at 6 a.m. again. And like, you walk over to your brother and you're like, Do I smell? You kind of smell. Okay, hold on. Reach in your purse, you know, hose yourself down with whatever is in there. And you hope for the best day ever, because I could not believe how the hours was so shocking. I couldn't even explain it to my family. Christina, I'm sure your friends are like, what? You were in at 5:45 in the morning and you didn't leave until 9 o'clock at night. You're like, well, they had symposiums or they had whatever. And you have to explain to these, your friends who don't get it, that if they're there, you're there. And that's where the money is, because come January and February, it just goes by. And then what happened in March this year, when it went by a lot earlier than it was supposed to.
Yeah.
But now everything's online. But I want to also say that even though it's online and you want to dedicate yourself to figuring those things out, but the hands-on is super important. You know, if you can even call a local venue, even like VER or wherever you are, and just say, hey, I really want to learn the E2, E3. I want to learn something as simple as a presentation pro, which nobody uses anymore. Apparently it's still an awesome thing. I just want to put my hands on it. I hope that people will still allow you to come in and get that, because troubleshooting is a big part of this industry. And online learning is great, but until you're on show and you know how to troubleshoot that way and who to call and what to do, you don't know until you're there. So, but absolutely online learning. And if there's a troubleshooting class for online too, where people are willing to share their stories of how it crashed and why, I'd love to hear that.
You make a terrific point with that. We are finding that our next generation is solely learning online, they may not be willing to come in and take the below the top line job.
Right.
I mean, if they're a whiz kid, completely smart, and actually can run an E3 inside and out, that's great.
Right.
But if you don't know how to set it up, you don't know how to troubleshoot it,
right,
you don't belong behind it.
And you don't ask the right questions. Because
and you won't ask the right questions.
Yeah, you won't ask the right questions, because you won't realize that there are just going to be things that clients ask for every single time. And there's going to be the regular show. And that if you know that you have a certain amount of things in the queue that you can actually do your little thing ahead of time at home in your leisure, whatever, potato, potato, aluminum. I can't help myself. It really just, I don't know myself sometimes. I think that it's nice to work with super professionals and learn from them, because they're going to tell you, hey, if you've got a 3-screen show, be prepared that the center screen, you're either going to want to do IMAG or, you know, I love these rules anymore about people saying, because no meeting planner anymore follows these rules. Okay. That you're never, you know, some people say you're never, ever supposed to put IMAG on the center screen. It's always supposed to go in the outboards, or you're never supposed to have, you know. And meanwhile, you're like, look, I got to do logo. Look, just plan for fluidity, because somebody's going to walk up here who is a big wig to the meeting planner, and they're going to say, you know, Kellogg is sponsoring this part. Can't we have IMAG on the out and the logo on the center, or just have them on the center? And, you know, it's always be prepared for, it's not, there is no standard operating procedure when it comes to this anymore. Be prepared, because, and your clients will expect that it's as easy as asking somebody as it is to click on an app. They will think that it is that quick that you are going to be like, okay, you know what, for this next session, here's what I want to see. And they think it's okay to, you know, with the equipment we had before, that would have been like, you literally have to go to your client and be like, you know, no, we aren't set up to do it that way. But now you have to be prepared for that. And that means you have to be there. You have to be on site. And then you have to go through making sure that it will do it, and then troubleshooting it if it doesn't. And that no app can show you. Nobody. Then find a scissor lift early. Find a scissor lift early and park it somewhere where nobody takes it.
Yes. Yeah. And charge it. And charge it. You have to charge it.
And charge it.
Yes. Plug it in, charge please.
It. Oh my gosh. How many times have I walked into a dead scissor lift? No, the one thing that I've always told my clients is, if I made it look easy, then I did my job. Because you're not supposed to know that we're here. And if none of your attendees turned around to look at front of house, which I don't know why everybody knows to look at front of house when something goes wrong with AD. I don't know who taught them that. But no matter what happens, the screen could flicker, or the presenter could press the blackout button on the clicker. They'd all turn around and look at us at front of house. Why? Why? Oh, we didn't do it. We don't have
it's control. A collective, like,
yeah. Like, who taught them that? Who taught them that?
So it's Wizard of Oz stuff. It's Wizard of Oz. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Yeah, that's
it's something. But no matter, and it's crazy, they always know where you are in the room. They know where front of house is in the room. I don't care where they are in the room, that they watch in from the other's opposite end of the room. They know exactly where you are. I have no idea how they know, but they can't find their seat or the chair to get out.
That's true.
And then right, another funny direction. Thing about front of house, though, is that the moment that front of house becomes meerkats, where all of the AV techs, somebody says, in conclusion. Yeah. And they're all exactly awake.
They're like, oh, yeah, because everybody's sitting there doing their Sudoku, you know.
Yeah.
What?
Back of house, too. Back of house.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Time. Everybody wakes up with that backstage.
Yeah, yeah. Put the stale free coffee down and.
right.
So true. It's so true. Headset. And that's why. And headset and client on headset. There's some, got to be some funny stories about that. That's always.
So I have. I got a funny story about Bill Fitch on headset and client on headset, but I will save that one for our Bill Fitch series.
You know what? We should have a whole series about clients on calm.
Headset etiquette.
So, yeah, headset etiquette. Yeah.
I had this thing, and my crew knew that if I said COH, that's client on headset.
Right.
They knew. Sometimes there was, you know, some other something in the room. I can't remember what it was, but somebody long ago had some other little buzzword. But COH, client on headset.
Yeah.
And for years, we're doing the same show over and over. And client puts on his thing, and I said, COH, thank you, everybody. He looks at me. He goes, what does that mean? Now, I've known him for a very long time. I'm like, that means you got on headset. That means they need to watch their mouths now. Mm-hmm. He's like, I thought that meant I was on headset.
I think in DC it was wrench on a ladder or lobster.
Lobster. I remember
it was
lobster.
It was lobster.
Lobster.
I never understood where those two things came from, but yeah, that was lobster and
lobster, I guess, because it was easy to explain away. We were just talking about food.
Yeah, that's right. Why we pick lobster? Well, because nobody eats it. No, I mean, not in our. We eat mostly flat meat and 5-hour energies. So if you were having
anything
lobster,
but pizza, please. Yeah. Anything but pizza. Feed the crew.
So I know we're running out of time because it's getting really late, but I have a really funny clown headset story if you want to hear it real quick. It's super funny.
Go for it.
So many, many years ago, there was a guy who was, he started out as a camera guy, and now he's actually the owner of one of our big clients. He's one of the owners. But back in the day, he was just kind of a TD. And when we met him, Rick and I would give him grief. I'd just give him grief. It's just what I do. It's what we do to each other. Just give him grief. And he was on headsets as a camera operator, and we had RTS. And so he turned down A channel, and he had B channel. He was listening to Rick and I, and I'm just giving him grief. And meanwhile, Lonnie, she was the one who's calling the show. She was calling the show, and she was like, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that, and then we'll do this. And I'm just giving Carl grief. I'm giving him grief. And Carl keys in, and he says, "Shut up, you skanky hoe." Yeah. And he keyed into the wrong channel because it's RTS. And so then Lonnie says, "Excuse me?" on our channel. So I took a beat and I waited a second, and I'm thinking, oh, it's all going by head. Do I say something? Do I tell her? You know? And then I said, "Lonnie, I think that was for me." And so that's a funny story, not the end of it. We tell the story all the time. Carl's a couple years later, he's in another city. Somebody starts telling him that story. And he said, "I'm that guy." Yeah, shut up, this skanky hoe. Now he's my boss. Now he owns the company that I work for. He started out as a camera guy, and I would give him grief, but now he owns them. He hires me. Anyway.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, I had to be told to shut up after a while because I was making everybody cry laughing, and I was saying all the wrong things, trying to, you know, and I was using Bane's voice at one point, and I'm like, "Camera one, I need you to go over and kill camera two." Like, we don't have a camera two. "Okay, comrade, you need to go to his house and I need to kill him." It's just, Fig was out of control. But, you know, half the time it was a mess. I mean, I think if recorded comms could be some of the funniest material out there in the world, yeah, because you know, or maybe we think it's funny because we're absolutely not allowed to laugh at that moment too. Because everything's twice as funny when you're not allowed to laugh, right? So,
I had a client that was on comm with us and was just as crazy as we are. Like, we all knew that he was on comm, and we waited for him to make the first move, right? He goes, "Y'all are so serious. Y'all need to loosen up." And I was like, "Okay." So he starts talking, and we start talking about code words and this and that. Like, then he wanted us back for November this year, if it obviously not going to happen. And he was like, "I want the same crew. Code word is ice cream cannon. Done. When I say ice cream cannon, the show's a go." I'm like, "All right, cool, no problem, let's do it." And he goes, "And next year I want to sell admission to hear what's going on back here, because I think what's going on back here is a lot better than what's going on out there." And I was like, let me know, I will make this happen, but I get 20%. And he was like, "Got you, let's go."
Oh my God, we used to have a joke when it would get super boring, like, and it was just droning on, and it was some like one screenshot of something, you're like, all of a sudden someone coming online and go, "Stand by for confetti cannon." "Stand by for balloon drop. Are we go for pyro?" Like, nowhere at like,
right?
"Stand by for pyro."
Like, wait, we don't have that. What happened?
And we're standing by for pyro. Like,
my favorite was always, "Can we confirm that the satellite truck has audio?"
Oh, yeah. "What satellite truck?" Oh,
"They can't hear us."
All right, well, that kind of sucks.
So it's the games you can play, and then calm farts, which are always funny. So Christopher was the king of calm farts. Like, what was that? Christopher.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. So, because he would do it to me because I was 3 feet away from him, and he's like, "Was it real or was it Memorex, Mara?" You know, you can't go anywhere.
You're about to find out if it was real or not.
Give it 3 seconds. He's so evil. He'll blame that on me.
Right?
He'd be right, but like, it's fine. Just pretend like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, I would love to keep this going, but it is after 9 on the East Coast. Yeah. It's getting late for you ladies.
Yeah.
And I want you to still love me enough to let me do this again with you. So,
none of us are wearing pants, right?
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us.
Join us.
Join us
on Feed the Crew.